Yo.
Hey people, it's exciting to be here this morning. And Chidalu, how does it feel?
Yeah, it feels good to be here. It feels good, yeah.
What's going on? How's your week starting?
It's starting on a good note. It's starting on a good note. We have a lot of events from last week to unpack a whole lot.
But and we are ready to get into it.
Definitely. Yeah. Yes.
Well, did you read this article I saw trending on Twitter yesterday from New York Times?
Oh yeah, the article on Nigeria. I think let me get it. It says something about I think the headline is "A Resourceful Nation Buckles."
Yeah.
That's the headline.
And like the knees got weak.
down on his knees and talks about the worst, Nigeria having the worst economic crisis.
What do you think about that report?
I think the report is a picture of what we have going on in the country today. The report it was very, what do you call it? It was very, very, I don't want to use the word enlightening, but it was just a perfect picture of what the country...
There are things we already know.
Exactly. We know and we're experiencing.
Yeah.
Both individuals, businesses, these are things we all know and are experiencing. And we've also had a couple of businesses shut down operations in Nigeria. We've seen this, people are going through untold hardship. Food inflation is at an all-time high. Food inflation currently is at 40.66%. So people can hardly afford basic amenities. So these things are, it's just a true picture of what we're experiencing currently.
Yeah. And then the response from Mr. Bayo Onanuga was kind of interesting.
Oh, I didn't see that response. What did he say?
Yeah, I don't have it on my screen now, but he made reference to the fact that the current administration made the economy in a bad state. Yeah, and I think there's a part of the report that said the economy was dead when they came in, and that they were doing everything within their powers to get the economy going again.
that's an excuse that people are tired of hearing.
Yeah.
Every government comes in and makes reference to meeting the economy in a bad state than...
Yeah, it was the same story when Buhari came in.
Exactly.
The PDP years were terrible. It was 16 years of misrule
by and
the PDP.
His administration, that's former President Buhari, came in and gave that excuse. This current administration is giving the same excuse. At what point do we get past these excuses and start making sort of amends? Whether the economy was in a bad state or not, that's not an excuse that should still be given. At this point, people want results. What are you doing to ensure that people are getting the results they need? I mean, there were a lot of promises, campaign promises and all that, but let's not delve into politics. Let's keep it straight up. Yeah, let's not delve into that. Of course, we've also had the labor union. They are still in talks with the federal government. The NLC.
Are they still in talks?
Nothing is set in stone, nothing concrete yet.
I think I saw a report that said they're going to continue discussion this week and reach an agreement. Well, we'll see what happens. But for the New York Times report,
yes,
in all fairness to the administration, let me put it this way, both the New York Times article,
yes,
and the response from Mr. Bayo Onanuga, okay, were both true. One, on one hand, we're experiencing, I think it was described as the worst
economic crisis in a generation. Yes.
Yeah. And again, over this last weekend, I was going through the history of the country. At some point, we have been in this situation before.
You know, as bad as this?
Well, I was not born then, so I don't really know if it was as bad as this. But this was the era following the independence of Nigeria.
Okay.
We had a lot of people migrating from rural areas to urban areas. So that kind of caused food crisis. A lot of people abandoned
famine, yeah,
to go work in these big farms, cocoa plantations, palm plantations in the southeast and the pyramids in the north. So you had a lot of people leaving their subsistence farming to go work in these bigger farms. So we had similar food crisis, which led to the Obasanjo's experiment at that time, Operation Feed the Nation.
Yes.
I think it was in 1976. So we've been in this kind of situation before. And what we need to do is put in the work to get out of it, as you said.
Yes.
You know, so Mr. Bayo Onanuga saying that they met a bad economy is true also. But to your point, we don't want to hear that.
Because the man who is buying, who gets to the markets, or the woman or the woman who gets to the markets today and wants to buy, say, tomatoes or wants to buy meat, doesn't want to hear the excuse of Buhari.
The economy was...
You met the economy in a very bad state, or it was dead.
Yeah.
The man doesn't want to hear that. Because at the end of the day, you can either have... If you concentrate so much on having to give excuses, I mean... How do you get results if you're concentrating so much on giving excuses? So you can either have the excuses or you have results.
Yeah, agreed. That's my favorite.
Exactly. So the excuses are valid, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's saying they are not. But at what point do we get past giving the same excuses?
You can have both excuses and results.
And results.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate here.
Okay.
I think... For this is in the corporate world, we always talk about not combining excuses with results.
Yes.
But I think in politics, it's a bit different. There are guys who are spokespersons of the government,
mm-hmm,
who make the excuses.
And there's opposition.
When there is need. No, and there are people who deliver the results, whose responsibility it is to deliver the result. So in this case, we're not looking at what the spokesperson of the government has said, but rather... I'd rather look at what the people responsible are doing. If you look at the current minister for finance and the coordinating minister for the economy, Mr. Wale Edun, you know, when this administration came into office in May 29, 2023, there was a lot of enthusiasm in the market. People expected reforms, which came.
Yeah.
And part of the excitement in the market was the fact that guys like Wale Edun were penciled to play prominent roles in the economy. I mean, he's been there, he's done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's one of the best bankers we have in Nigeria. He co-founded Stanbic IBTC. He started Chapel Hill Denham, which is one of the best investment banks in Nigeria today. So most of the excitement was because of people like him. The market expected that we'll get results,
mm-hmm,
that he would deliver. Nobody expects him to fail. And I think that is what this administration needs to consider. Consider that people have high expectations because of the caliber of people that are managing the economy and the central bank. People expect results, and I hope they are able to deliver that result. But of course, it's different, you know, the informations they have that we don't have.
Sure.
Yeah, the informations. We can only sit down here, pontificate, make speculations. But there are things that they know that we don't know. It may be as bad as it's been painted by New York Times. And that will also mean that delivering results will be a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
So
it's had more difficult. Well,
let's hope for the best. Let's hope for the best.
Yes, yes, definitely. But going from that into since we're still talking about the economy, let's look at inflation. Inflation data came out last week.
We're on the show proper now, right?
Yes, we're on the show
okay.
proper.
Okay.
Inflation data came out last week. And inflation was at, hold on, let me pull up the figures.
33.95%
for me, which was last month, which is of course up from 33.69 in April. And this is an 11.54% increase from May of 2023. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know inflation has been a hot topic around the world globally, coming out from the COVID-19 pandemic, going into 2021, 2022, we had supply chain issues and there were disruptions in the global economy because of the pandemic. So we've had every country globally has had to navigate through this inflation curve. But we've seen a moderation in some countries. Countries like we've seen a moderation in Europe, in America. The EU, as at last 2 weeks, recently cut in interest rates.
Hmm.
Recently cut interest rates. And we've seen inflation get, also in America, in the US, we've seen a moderation in inflation. Now, Nigeria.
I think the last figure was 3.3%.
Yes, 3.3%. This year it's been a bit there and there, but there's still some moderation compared to 2023 figures.
Yeah.
But Nigeria is one of the few countries where inflation has been on an elevated level. Now, some people would say, or some analysts would say, okay, it's rising at a lower pace. Because if you're comparing April data and May data, you would see that I think from March to April, it rose at about 0.3%. Okay. I need to confirm that. But
2.29, yeah.
Yeah, 2.29. And then now the increase from April data to May or April inflation rate till May was 0.26 okay. increase. So now,
I think I'm getting it wrong. You're talking about the points.
The points by difference.
Which, the point difference.
The
yeah.
point difference. Okay. So from March to April, the point difference was about 0.3%.
Okay.
And for April to May, the point difference is 0.26%.
Mm-hmm.
So some people would argue inflation is growing, or is increasing, but at a slower pace. Some people will make that argument too. Mm-hmm. But then we've seen the central bank raise interest rates in response to this inflation figures. We've seen the central bank raise interest rates up to currently 26.25% in an attempt to get a handle on inflation. But it appears as if the solution has not worked. So what do you think is responsible for this?
Well, if you look at the factors you've highlighted, it was a global phenomenon.
Sure.
From the COVID disruption, supply chain crisis, and then the attack of Ukraine by
yes.
Russia,
mm-hmm.
which led to a surge in energy prices. I think that was what really started to stoke inflation all the more, because post-COVID, we saw some deceleration in inflation, just slight deceleration before Russia attacked Ukraine and led to surge in energy prices and then food prices. It was global. But in Nigeria, we had additional issues that complicated our situation.
Yeah.
Which is why you see that the fortunes of the Nigerian inflation is a bit different from what we're experiencing with the rest of the world. Europe essentially has come down towards 2.6%, US 3.3%. Even Ghana, that was as high as 54% or so at some point in 2022,
yes,
has come down to 23%.
Yes.
So we've seen some deceleration globally. But for Nigeria, there were additional issues. And it started with, actually dates back to 2019, when the Buhari's administration closed Nigeria's border in a bid to protect local industries. And it led to a surge in inflation. We're trying to get out of that when COVID happened.
Yes.
And then followed with a disruption in supply chains. And then inflation started to rise. Then the Russia issue happened. And we saw the continued acceleration of inflation. And then we, in 2023? Mm. Towards the end of 2022, before the election,
yes,
the past central bank governor redesigned Naira and created scarcity in the in economy, which kind of started to complicate the situation a lot more. And then when this administration came, the policies we are talking about today came into being. The removal of
first subsidy,
which sent the price of diesel, petrol, and kerosene skyrocketing.
Yes.
And then we had the
the float of the currency.
Yes, yes, the liberalization of exchange rate, which essentially sent price of imported items, including food, going up.
Yeah.
And kind of complicated the business environment in the country, because a lot of manufacturers, people who needed foreign inputs in their production process, now had to face higher operational costs. And then we also had lately the removal of electricity subsidy.
Electricity subsidy,
so
yes.
If so, you put all of this together,
energy, yeah,
you know, you see that the country was facing a different set of problems. And the interesting thing is that we expect one person to deal with all of these problems I've highlighted, from the issue of the Naira redesign to the removal of all of these subsidies. We all know that the CBN solution, which is to raise rates.
Yeah, to raise rates.
Is not enough. It will go some way, but it's not enough.
Yes.
It can address the issue of money supply.
Mm-hmm.
It can stabilize exchange rates in the sense that when you raise rates, you have more of these foreign portfolio investors coming and bringing in their dollars to invest in the country.
Yeah.
And that would stabilize exchange rates. You know, it can achieve all of those, but there are other issues. Food, I didn't mention insecurity.
Which affects food.
A big part of what is driving the 40.66%. But the interesting thing is we are all affected by inflation. It's bad for everybody. For the government, they are facing high borrowing costs.
Yes.
The cost of borrowing is all-time high, and their debt service too has skyrocketed. For businesses, we can't say it enough, a lot of businesses are suffering high electricity costs, unstable exchange rate, and generally insecurity and difficult business operating environment for many companies that has led to the closure of a couple of businesses. For individuals, especially the low income earners, it's loss of purchasing power. You know, we're talking about 60,000 minimum wage. That can't even buy a bag of rice.
Oh, 62,000.
It cannot still buy a bag of rice.
I mean, bag of rice just went up from
I think it's 80 something.
80 something. Yeah, it's currently at 80 something thousand.
So everybody is struggling with this issue.
Yes.
And we all act as if it's the central bank that can fix all of them. No, it's not going to happen, because Cardoso needs more support from the fiscal side of things.
It's supposed to be all hands on deck.
Yeah.
Use the monetary policy, the monetary tools, the fiscal side too has to has to come in. It's supposed to be all hands on deck. Because
no, we're not even talking about the states, because ordinarily we're supposed to have food production, which is the crux of the matter.
Of the matter, yes.
Yeah, food production. We have insecurity. Most states, you know, I was reading something on social media about Kuban. What's his name? Chief Priest.
Chief Priest, yes.
Who said he moved his business from
Imo State to Lagos because of insecurity. Yeah.
And this is what is happening. We are leaving the states that are supposed to be the food bed of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
States like Benue is ravaged by bandits.
Bandits, yeah. Yeah.
You know, the middle bed generally used to be like the food bed of the nation. But these states are ravaged today by bandits.
So people can't even go to their farms.
Go to their farms. So Cardoso can raise rates, but he can't deal with that. It's not his job to deal with those issues. So it's everybody's responsibility, the central bank, the minister for finance, and the state governors, the local governments, chairman.
True.
It's everybody's business. Investors can look at even the current rates and feel excited about it. Yields on treasury bill is up to 26.
Yeah, 26%. Yeah.
But that is not hedging you against inflation. Inflation is at
3.695.
Sorry.
13.95. Yes.
So you're losing about how many percent?
Give or take. You're losing
7 points, almost 8%.
Yes.
After adjusting for inflation. So it's bad for everybody, and we all need to do our bits.
Yeah, all hands on deck. But I mean, while the CBN is using the monetary tool, or is exploring the monetary tool to reduce money supply in circulation, we have last week the FARC announced the disbursement of 1.143 trillion as total revenue for May. So a breakdown showed that the federal government received 365 billion, states received 338 billion, and local governments received 288 billion. And of course, the oil producing states, or the oil states, received extra 106 billion from the 13% derivation revenue. Well, this is a lot of cash influx into the system. Because now we have the CBN trying to reduce, or using their tools to reduce, the money supply in circulation. And then we have an inflow of supply again. Now, these are two sides of a coin. What does this mean for the economy?
I mean, it's the practice is a bit head scratching, because we have this arrangement where 52%, according to the sharing formula,
yes,
53% approximately of the revenue to be shared goes to the federal government, 27% goes to the state, and 21% to the local government.
Local governments, yeah. So
effectively, the states get, because the local governments are in the pocket of the states.
Of the states, yeah.
Yeah. The states get 48% of this revenue. The problem is what these monies
are being used for. Yes, that's the important question.
Is it channeled into productive ventures that impacts positively on the economy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've heard allegations where these allocations get to these governors, and then they come back to Zone 4.
And he enters pockets, private pockets.
Private pockets.
Yes, so everybody, you start hearing contracts flying here and there.
Yeah. So it's time for us to start pointing hands at the states, their viability. The states we have, are they viable economic centers that drive economic activities, or just mere cost centers where these allocations come in every month and then get into different hands and then find its way into the economy, chasing few goods and services.
Yes.
You know, so it kind of complicates the work of the central bank governor,
mm-hmm,
where you take out money from the from circulation, and then through the FARC allocation, some of these monies find their way back into the economy, not through productive economic activities. So that for me is a problem. You know, we keep clamoring for creation of states, but it's time to start looking at viability. These states need to justify their existence. You can't just say we are for 8 local governments, for equity, give us a state.
A state.
And then we're going to, the country is going to bear the cost of your assembly, the state assembly.
Yes.
You're going to have commissioners, a retinue of personal assistants,
mm-hmm.
drivers,
SSAs.
At the expense of the rest of us.
True.
You know, you can't build an economy that way. There has to be strategy. You must justify why these monies get to you. I think it's time we started pointing hands at these states and demanding accountability. We've said it's been all talks. But I think it's that time where we need to start looking at the justification for what they use this money for. You know, you can't be just mere cost centers where we just send you money. It's like a glorified treasurer.
And then
you share. You like. Which has kind of created this mindset for us that we have a national cake to be shared. So everybody's
just wants to get a slice of that cake.
It percolates to other sectors,
true.
Whether the oil and gas sector, the private sector. We all have this mindset that there is a cake that we all must benefit from.
That's true. Okay. So just to delve from that a bit, the OPEC, there was the Nigerian crude oil production for the month of May. It's declined to 1.251 million barrels per day from 1.281 that was recorded in April. So we've basically seen a decline in oil production in Nigeria. We've seen a decline in oil production over the years.
From 2014.
Yeah.
December 2014 was the highest level we saw in the last 10 years. I think it was about 1.89 million barrels per day. But since then, it's been inconsistent.
True.
To the level we are at now.
That's true. And considering that oil is the major driver of even our GDP growth, considering that the oil sector is one of the major drivers. Apart from services, though, you have the oil driving most of our revenue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very bad tell that this is something that while you're trying to rehabilitate other aspects of the economy, you have the agriculture and, you know, other aspects of the economy. Oil is something you have in your pockets already. Because we've had, coming from last year to this year, we've had a lot of, the NNPC has curtailed, or the NNPC has curtailed a lot of the
oil thefts.
We've had reports like that. Some people have been caught, or some ships have been caught, or were discovered
and burnt.
Nobody danced to their, or nobody was incriminated in all of that. But that's by the way. We've had these reports coming from last year or mid last year to this year, but we were still seeing a decline in oil production. So for when CBN is also trying, part of what CBN has been trying to do is to improve foreign exchange earnings, increase dollar supply to the market, and of course use that to stabilize exchange rates.
Yeah.
So we've been able to improve the oil production, which is a major supply or a major avenue for getting a dollar influx. So that's by the way. But on another note, we have the World Bank just approved a loan to Nigeria. I think it was a loan of 2.25 billion. It was announced by the Minister of Finance.
Billion dollars.
Yes, that dollar is important. Yeah, so the World Bank just announced that and called it financial support packages. And according to the statement, let me read as quoted, the approved operations include $1.5 billion for the Nigeria reforms for economic stabilization to enable transformation development policy financing program. That's reset DPF. And $750 million is for the Nigeria Accelerating Resource Mobilization Reforms Program for results. Of course, these are big names for just saying financial support packages. So how does this help our economy?
Well, it's a lot of issues, and it's harkens back to what we've been talking about, the whole mess we are in as a people, as a group, and we urgently need to get out of it. You know, it's like someone taking the egg, the chicken that lays the golden egg for you.
Yes.
And you watch it. That is what is going on in our oil sector.
Yes.
We've watched our oil production decline over these years. We talk about oil theft, you know, we talk about poor investment in that industry. Because I mean, if it's so important a sector for you as a people, then you need to make the needed investment to optimize.
Yes, yeah, true.
I think we have the highest or the second highest proven oil reserve in Africa as a country.
Because even with the decline, we're still ahead compared to other African countries. We're still ahead.
Yeah. So our potential is enormous. We shouldn't be having the problems we're having if we simply improve oil production back to 1.8, which is the level we're capable of doing 2 million.
I mean,
2 million barrels.
I'm looking at the data, and from 1998 all the way to 2015, we were doing 2 million, 2 points.
On the average. Yeah.
We're doing 2 points, at the least 2.1 million barrels per day on an average. And from 2016, we started declining to, to 1.8, 1.9, and went all the way down to 1.4 in 2022. Then 1.3 last year.
I think we saw 900 and something at some point.
I mean, this is average. Yeah. Taking the records, the data from the
OPEC.
Yeah, from OPEC. This is on an average for each year. So as at 2023, it was 1.3. So these, we have the ability, it shows that we have the ability to go way more than what we're doing.
Yeah, sure, we do, but because of all of these factors, oil theft, which is a major issue, and we have to again look at the role of the NNPC in all of this. The NNPC is an industry player,
yes,
in the oil sector, and also a regulator. That kind of creates the OPEC structure we are seeing today. Because you can't be both an industry player and a regulator at the same time. So there needs to be a separation of what the NNPC does. We need to have like an unbiased regulator who has nothing to gain.
But has
the interests of the people of Nigeria at heart. Because if you don't get to that point, because the allegation that even some of these multinational firms underreport their actual production. So we don't get compensated as much as we should from the activities. So until you have somebody who cleanses that industry, sanitizes it, we cannot know what even our true ability is as of today. So in my opinion, we need to have a separation of responsibilities. I mean, we need to decide what we want the NNPC to be. Is it an industry player?
Or which a regulator?
Is more like what they are today.
So
we need a regulator who has the interests of the Nigeria people
at, and is unbiased, has nothing to gain. Has nothing to gain.
Of course, we know the country we live in, but we've seen transformation to an extent in the banking sector. Financial services generally, you mentioned that financial services contributes the most to our GDP. And it's not surprising to know that, because most of the industries, whether it's telecommunication, whether it's banking, ICT, they are fairly regulated. You know, so we need that sort of
regulation.
Watchdog
over
the oil sector. And funny enough, this ministry has been under the presidency for the longest time.
The last one, we had our president, or Buhari, as the minister for, what do you call
petroleum.
It? For petroleum. Minister for petroleum. So, I mean, that was not ideal. There's no universe where that is even ideal.
I mean, with that, you should expect better oversight.
If
there's a direct report to the president, you know, because it's, maybe I'm playing the devil's advocate also.
Yeah.
Because the president saying, I want to be held accountable for what happens here, you know. So we need to see that result that we all yearn for. I mean, you can't have 1.2 million barrel per day with what we are going through. If we just ramp up production to 1.8 million,
we'll see a lot of improvement in
many
the economy.
Of the problems that we,
but
we have today.
For the dollar supply,
and then
the
to your supply. To the financial support package from World Bank. I mean, it's maybe something to be excited about, but for me, it's a short-term measure.
Short-term, and is it going to be used for what it was termed for?
I mean,
these are the issues.
At the end of the day, these monies will...
It's earmarked as financial support, for financial support
for
packaging.
For stabilizing the
economy.
The economy.
Are we going to see that stabilization? Is this money going to be used to achieve what it was earmarked for?
Yeah. I mean, to, like I said earlier on, there is an asymmetry of information between those of us on this side and the people in government. They see where the issues are. They see where the problems are. But what we keep talking about is this idea of palliatives, you know, giving handouts to people to ease the suffering will not work.
It won't work.
You have to teach people how to fish and not give them fish. You know, we can't keep handing out money to people and expect the economy to grow. There are issues that must be addressed. Insecurity, the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
A lot of businesses are folding up because of high cost of electricity, high cost of energy, exchange rate issues. These are the issues that the government needs to prioritize and handle first. Over and above handing out these stipends to vulnerable families, as we say. Because if you give all these families, say, 70,000, that just buys a bag of rice.
It doesn't. It doesn't even buy a half bag of
maybe
rice.
Maybe it buys a bag of rice, but it will eventually finish.
Finish, and then what next?
And we're back to...
Exactly.
So I'm saying it's a short-term measure. Long-term, we need to enhance our ability to generate revenue internally, which is one of the aim of this loan, you know, to boost non-oil revenue and also help with the receipt of oil revenue.
Mm-hmm.
We need to enhance those capacities internally.
That's true. But going to, down to CBN's role in all of this, of course, we have the last week, there was a Treasury bill auction last week that closed the 1 year. The 1 year Treasury bill closed at 20.50 from the previous one that closed at 20.60. So 20.67, yes. Yep. Sorry, 20.67. So we've seen the last how many auctions? The last four auctions, if I'm correct, the last six auctions have seen the rates close. I think the last six auctions, it was 20.7 last six auctions, and then we've seen 20.67 couple of times.
I think we had 20.7 like over three.
Yes, three times. Three then we times, saw 20.67 twice, and now it's come down to
20.69.
So yeah.
20.7.
We saw 20.69, 20.67, yeah. And now 20.5. So with these figures or with these rates, do you think yields have peaked on treasury bills?
That seems to be the body language of the debt management office. Yeah, because if you see, I think they are 20.7 have become their resistant band.
Yes. The highest rates went up to was in early March. It went up to 21.49 in early March. Yeah. That's the highest. So it looks like they're not willing to raise rates
that much anymore. I think from 21.49, it came down to 21.12.
Yes.
And then down to 20.7. And slowly, it appears as if they are trying to cap.
To cap it and still
the
make
auction
it.
At 20 point. So what I see them doing is to gradually bring down this rate. I doubt if we're going to see 21.
No,
except inflation really gets out of control again.
Yes.
I doubt we're going to see 21 because look at the 91 days also. 91 days came down, has been at 16.5 region.
Yeah, it has been around, at those, that level, that yes. Level,
and now down to 16.3.
4.3, yeah.
So for 182.
18 region, now is down to 17.44.
44, yeah. So you see them gradually lowering rate.
Lowering.
The DMO is also worried about cost of debt service. There was a report last week that indicated that we had is a 96% increase in debt service. The cost of debt service from January to May this year compared to January to May 2023. Our debt service currently, as at the end of May, was up to foreign debt service, up to $219 billion. You know, that is huge. And they want to keep that cost lower by driving down their borrowing cost gradually. So I agree with you. We may have seen the peak. Of the treasury bill rate. And so I think for investors who have been sitting on the sideline or those hoping to get higher yields, that dream may not
happen. That train has left the station.
Yeah.
Okay. But coming from that to let's delve into the US. There was the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, held their meeting 11th and 12th. And on 12th, they left at the end of the meeting, they left interest rates unchanged at the range of 5.25 to 5.50, where it has been since July 2023. So, I mean, what does this mean for the market, for the US market?
Well, I think the market seemed to love it because
they were expecting.
Yeah, it was what was expected.
Yeah.
And that was what happened. So what happened in the market last week? What was the change in S&P 500? It was positive last week.
S&P 500, yes. They closed sharply higher.
Yes.
So, but the US dollars and yields on treasuries fell. but you can get the exact
okay. figure. I'm trying to pull that up.
Okay.
In a minute. So overall, I think the market, the expectations of the market is being met, you know, and nobody expected anything other than holding rates steady.
Holding rates steady,
because
yes.
You look at inflation, inflation had started coming down. But for the Fed, they are careful not to start cutting rates as the EU did too quickly. Because that will mean that if they start cutting rates too quickly,
mm-hmm.
inflation may reverse. You know, we saw at the beginning of the year some slight increase in inflation in the US in the first quarter.
Yes, before it started from 3.1 in January to 3.2 and then 3.5 in March before it started coming down. And it's currently at 3.3%.
Yeah, so inflation has started coming down as they expect.
Yeah.
Right? And what they are looking at now is it's like the doctor giving you a medication and saying, keep taking your medication, you get better, but it's going to take time.
Yeah.
But you have to take your medications along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it's about waiting to see what happens with inflation.
Yeah.
There's the expectation that between now and September, inflation will continue to come down. And then the Federal Reserve will have better justification to start cutting interest rates. But between now and then, we hope, the Federal Reserve hopes that the economy remains strong and resilient. You know, the US economy has performed better than virtually all the economies, in the world. And today, for me, I see the US economy as the most significant economy in terms of signaling that we can get out of this whole inflation issues without experiencing a global recession. I think a lot of that comes from the resilience of the US economy.
Yes.
And the expectation is that resilience will be preserved between now and September, and that inflation comes down to the point where the Federal Reserve will, at least the statement from Federal Reserve indicated that they are considering one rate cut this year. You know, and it's in a second order, these are the sort of things that could influence the decision of the Nigeria Central Bank when they meet in July to decide on what to do with interest rate.
In July?
Yeah, I think the next...
For Nigeria.
The next meeting is in July.
Yeah, it's in July.
In a second order, they will be looking at what happens with US inflation, and then this decision by the US Federal Reserve to hold rates steady.
Yeah.
Because if inflation continues to, the pace of inflation continues to slow in Nigeria and ultimately decelerate for this month, mm-hmm. leading up to the next meeting, it is likely that the central bank may stop their rate hike,
yes, and just keep it stable for some time.
I don't anticipate it, even if they are going to hike, I don't anticipate a significant hike, maybe 0.5.
The last hike was by 150 bips, all right. So, Apple has cut the AI craze.
finally
caught the AI craze. Last week they made the leap into the AI space with the mm-hmm. introduction of Apple Intelligence, and of course they announced this at their annual conference, and the new AI features are set to debut in the iOS 18 and integrates a lot of AI capabilities directly into iPhones, iPads, Macs. And I think, okay, so they talked about, these are into details, multiple new text and image generation features, notes, the Genmoji, which allows users to create custom emojis. And I think at the end of this, they talked about privacy. One of their commitments, Apple's commitments as a company, is privacy. So I that's a commitment they put at the heart of their brand, that there will still be maximum privacy. Users will still experience maximum privacy. So with this entry of Apple into the AI space, I think following the announcement, their shares surged 10.03% for the week, for last week. Their shares surged 10.03%. So what does this mean? Or how does this put Apple? We've had a couple of companies in the AI space already. You have Microsoft, you have Google already running in the, or participating maximally in the AI space. So where does this put Apple in that race? Because it's a race.
Well, I don't know if I want to call it a race, but the thing here is, before this whole AI frenzy,
yes,
you know, Apple had been struggling, especially with the sale of their iPhones,
yes.
Yeah. And over the last couple of quarters, most of their revenue growth came from services, the services segment. You know, in the last quarter result, they had a 4% decline in sales, quarter on quarter. They had a 4% decline. But in spite of that, they had a 14% growth in services. You know, so by the way, I own Apple stock. And at some point, I was wondering if they had peaked as a company, you know. But, you know, Apple is a company that we know innovates at an incredible pace, you know. So when OpenAI launched the ChatGPT, I think in 2022.
Yeah, 2022. For
most of these big tech companies, I think they adopted a wait and see kind of approach.
Yes.
You know, and over this period, while they were waiting, some of these smaller firms, innovators, smaller players in the AI space,
yes,
you know, have shown the capabilities of artificial intelligence, how you can use artificial intelligence to improve efficiency in business.
Yes,
you know, and it's like proof of concept. You know, Apple didn't need to get into proving that AI works.
Yeah,
what most of these big tech companies like Apple and Google did was to sit back and watch what was going on. Yeah, but having seen how effective and how transformative AI is, they've come back now to, you know, take all of that from all of these experiences and infuse that into their product. And they are doing it in a way that may compromise some of these smaller players. And ultimately, for most industries, that is what you get to see when you have people trying to disrupt, new ideas coming in. You have these smaller players who are usually at the forefront, but ultimately it comes down to who has capital, who has access to the market, customer base, and in the case of AI, who has the consumer's data. And these are three things that Apple has in abundance.
They have
2 million iPhone users, 2 million users of their product, whether iPhone, is it 2 million? 2 billion,
2 billion
users. They have 2 billion users of their devices. They have incredible amounts of data and they have large capital at their disposal, you know, to take on any competition. The reason I said I won't call it
a race.
Because the artificial intelligence on its own, it's something that is transformative for different industries, whether it's finance, healthcare, e-commerce, telecommunication, even electric EVs. So ultimately, the winners at the end of the day are likely going to be these guys.
The big players in those respective industries
who have the capital, access to the market, that is customers, and then access to data. Because you need to have access to
data to be able to,
you know. And this is where Apple has taken a lead, so to speak, because they have these 2 billion users on their platform,
mm-hmm.
and they have access to
data,
the data of these guys.
True.
And the smart thing they have done is to emphasize on privacy.
Privacy,
which
yes.
is the issue with cloud-based data storage in AI. Cloud-based storage is what guys like Amazon and Google use currently.
Yes,
yeah. So Apple is saying, look, on cloud, your information may not be safe, but if it's on device processing,
mm-hmm.
we can guarantee you better safety and privacy of your information. And what you can't do on your device, Siri, which is Apple's chatbot,
yes.
will communicate with
mm-hmm.
Platforms like ChatGPT.
Yeah, because they announced their partnership with OpenAI yes. through so, ChatGPT. Yes.
Yeah, Siri can communicate with ChatGPT
mm-hmm.
and get you that information without you signing up to ChatGPT. And without ChatGPT having access to
without compromising your
additional
data.
Information. Yeah. So by harping on privacy, I think they have opened another line of competition, you know, and I expect all the other big guys to take the cue from that.
Take the cue, yeah. I think, I mean, speaking on that, there was a post from Elon Musk, the owner of X and of course CEO of Tesla. He said, and I quote, "If Apple integrates OpenAI at the OS level," this was after Apple made their announcements, "then Apple devices will be banned at my companies. This is an unacceptable security violation. And visitors will have to check their Apple devices at the door, where they will be stored in a Faraday cage."
What's a Faraday cage?
I don't know, but a cage where they will be stored. So, but I mean, since he made the post, he has deleted it already. He has. Yeah. But I think what people were worried about was the security violation, which Apple has really underscored its commitment to keeping the privacy and data of people. And I mean, speaking of AI, we also have Yahoo. Yahoo just launched their news app, AI powered software from Artifact. They acquired Artifact in April. So they are launching their Yahoo News mobile app, which is an AI powered software. So
I think that goes to my point that you may start to see the acquisition of some of these smaller players.
Because exactly.
If you look at the writing features in the AI announced by Apple,
mm-hmm.
It's a bit more like what Grammarly does, you know.
True.
Correcting your grammar and helping you rewrite.
Yes.
It's like what Grammarly does. So at the end of the day, if you have 2 billion users on Apple,
mm-hmm.
some of these guys already use Grammarly, but with Apple doing the same thing Grammarly does,
I don't need to go log on Grammarly to.
Especially, and Grammarly is subscription based, you have to pay. True. But as an Apple user, you're not paying anything for it.
Yeah.
So I think they said this, the Apple Intelligence, as they called it, is available on iPhone 15.
Huh.
Only.
So we that don't have iPhone 15.
You have to start saving towards buying iPhone 16.
Okay, sure thing. So moving from Apple, let's look at another thing that happened over last week was the increase in tariff on Chinese EVs mm-hmm. by the European Commission or the European Union. We have that they put out a statement that they were going to impose extra duties of up to 38.1% on imported Chinese EVs from July. They started investigating Chinese EVs as, I think, since October 2023.
Mm-hmm.
They started a probe into Chinese EVs, and part of that probe was the subsidies, or is the subsidies Chinese EVs are enjoying from the Chinese government. So they are spending less on production and they import into the EU. So their profit margin, as expected, would be much more higher than EU manufacturers, who of course are not enjoying these same subsidies. So according to them, that's the idea behind it. And their additional tariffs, it ranges from 17.4% for BYD to 38.1% for SAIC. On top of, there was already a standard 10% duty. So this increase in tariff is on top of that 10%. So what does this mean for the global EV market?
Well, you have to understand, first of all, how the China became the second largest economy in the world.
Yeah.
And it starts from their export policy. You know, the Chinese economy in itself is not built to consume, to produce for the local market.
Yes.
Their whole economic policy is to produce for export.
Exports, yeah.
And most of those export is financed in part by the Chinese government.
Mm-hmm.
It's a state policy. So if you look at some of these Chinese construction companies building roads for us in Nigeria, most of those companies are partly owned by the Chinese government. Those that are not owned by Chinese government have access to cheap financing from the Chinese government. And in doing all of this, because there's a lot of subsidy or a lot of incentive granted these companies by the Chinese government, the Chinese have become a bit notorious, because for every country where they went, you know, they end up having an unfair advantage over local producers.
Yeah. Because we have these subsidies that range from grants, green bonds, tax exemptions.
So because of that, I think there's a global suspicion.
Even the U.S.
Yeah, the U.S. has a 100% tariff on Chinese imports. You know, and even Turkey last week also imposed a 40% tariff on Chinese EVs.
Oh, I missed that.
So it's like the Chinese are notorious for this, and this response is in response to that, because the EU has had this experience before, you know, with the solar panels.
Yeah.
The Chinese got into that market, and that led to the death of a lot of EU solar panel manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
So in their thinking, if they do nothing, the same is going to happen with their car manufacturers. But it's a lot more complicated than just imposing tariffs, because most of these manufacturers, most of the Geely, for instance, owns 100% stake in Volvo, which is a German car manufacturer. So you have companies like Tesla. Tesla has a manufacturing plant in China.
Yeah. BMW.
Yeah, he has one in Europe. Yeah, BMW also has a manufacturing plant in China. So there's a lot of partnership between a lot of these European car manufacturers, especially the German car manufacturers, with their Chinese counterparts. You know, so because of that, it kind of complicates the whole situation, because ultimately what is going to happen is cars will be more expensive in the EU, because the Chinese manufacturers will be forced to raise their prices. And customers at the end of the day, consumers who had access to buy those EVs at a cheaper price, will be the ones to suffer at the end of the day. So, but it's a lot more complicated.
Because they provided product quality and they provided affordability for consumers.
You know,
so
before,
when you remove...
Before, we used to look at made in China products as inferior. But that has changed.
EVs
have very high quality today. So the key thing is that these companies, I don't see how this even stops the advancement of the Chinese EV manufacturers. Because look at BYD, for instance, a company where I think Warren Buffett has a significant stake in BYD. BYD has, their tariff was raised by 17.4%.
Mm-hmm.
At that rate, they can still supply to the EU market.
They're
also proposing to build a plant in Europe So there's going to be a creative response from these guys.
Because there's, even the Chinese EVs accounts for nearly almost 40% of total, EU is the biggest market for Chinese
market
electric vehicles. And it accounts for 40%
of their exports. I read a report that China can supply 50% of the vehicles EVs we need worldwide. Oh, right. So they can supply half of the vehicles we need in the whole world. So it means that that industry is important to the Chinese government, and they're not going to buckle because of this.
Yeah,
they're going to build plants in Europe, in America. The Chinese, a couple of them are already building plants in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they build plants in Europe and the US, and still give subsidies to those manufacturers, how do you stop them?
But of course, there is that idea of cheaper labor
in China.
In China, cheaper labor and all that. So, I mean, that's another thing to consider. But we do know China is not going to take it lying down. There's going to be retaliatory measures from them to protect their own interests at the end of the day.
I think for me, I think whether it's the imposition of this levy or the expected retaliation from China is cosmetic, because at the end of the day, the consumers, the end users, the electric vehicle users will be the ones to pay the higher price ultimately.
Okay.
It's not going to stop the business of these manufacturers.
Okay,
this is not even a concluded discussion.
No, it's not. It's not. There are still talks. They are still talking about it. But even according to the EU Commission, there was a statement from a representative that said the main objective is to level the playing ground to offset unfair competition. Because one of the pieces of evidence is to point to is that EU companies producing cars in China will also be hit by the higher tariff, which we were talking about.
And a couple of EU countries have come out to oppose the stand of the EU. Germany, Sweden, and Hungary. Because I think BYD is proposing to build a plant in Hungary. And so this whole thing will affect all of those plants. And like I said earlier on, most of the car manufacturers in Europe are German firms, BMW, Volvo, and the likes. So ultimately, it's going to affect, there are negative consequences that will happen to some of these countries. So
then I think another thing is, globally, even at the COP28 that held last year, part of the goals was to achieve a tripled renewable energy capacity and doubled energy efficiency improvements by 2030. Part of that definitely is tied to EVs. So what do you think this means for the global clean tech industry?
Well, for the EV industry as a whole, I think there's been a slowdown in demand.
Yes.
You know, after COVID 2020, you know, there was a lot of excitement in the EV space.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of excitement. People expected significant growth in the sale of EV vehicles. But what we've seen is a slowdown in demand globally. So it's going to be a gradual thing. You know, the timeline is actually longer than we are all anticipating.
Yes.
You know, because obviously there are cost issues, there are technology issues. You know, these EVs are not cheap. They are very, very expensive. I think at some point the cheapest Tesla was $20,000. You know, how many people can afford that in a country like Nigeria? So we need to have technologies that will drive down the cost of batteries, which is a very critical component in the production of EV. And that is where a company like BYD has some advantage, because they have a lot of vertical integration. They produce their own batteries, they produce their EVs, a lot of components that goes into the production of EV is done by BYD itself. So they have control of their cost. And so I think you could get BYD for about $11,000 or so, a BYD EV. So there are issues around that in the sense that we need to have better technology in the production of batteries, you know, to make it cheaper and ultimately make the vehicles cheaper.
Yeah.
If the vehicles are not cheap enough, then
the transition would struggle to achieve
it.
Okay. Then another event that happened, this was in the Nigerian space, was Diego announced it would sell its 58.02% stake in Guinness Nigeria PLC to Tolaram. I hope I said that right. Tolaram. So it ends their over 5 decades of direct ownership. So Tolaram will be acquiring Diego's shares at 81.6 naira per share, with the total transaction amounting to 103.7 billion naira. Of course, this is pending regulatory approvals. So what do you think this means for Tolaram as a group and for Guinness Nigeria? Because here goes, Tolaram has zero footprints. Even though Tolaram has massive scale when it comes to manufacturing, marketing, distribution, they have a massive network when it comes to that with a lot of companies. They have stake in a lot of companies, but they have zero footprint in the alcoholic market.
Different.
And Guinness Nigeria PLC is one of the biggest breweries in Nigeria in terms of market share and revenue size, together with Nigeria breweries and international breweries. So what do you think this deal means for Tolaram as a group and for Guinness Nigeria?
Well, I think when that report came out initially, it sounded like Guinness was leaving the Nigerian market. That was what it looked like on social media.
There's a reason for that, because all the Tolaram has a 50-year presence in Nigeria. And for all their ventures, none of their ventures, they have ventures that are doing revenue, like they're doing very significant, doing significant revenues. Let me just put it that way. But with all of this, none of their ventures is publicly listed. None of them.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't blame people that, or who had this notion that with this recent acquisition, that maybe Guinness Nigeria would be delisted from the NGX.
Well, when the news came out, there was a lot of vibe on social media that this meant Guinness was leaving the Nigerian market. You know, before we heard, it was Tolaram acquiring the stake of Diageo.
In
Guinness. And it was a bit head scratching because Diageo is a brewer. They have experience in the alcoholic beverage industry, as opposed to Tolaram that has zero experience in that segment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was like, in actual sense, it feels more like Guinness has left Nigeria, because this is a brewer living for a conglomerate that has footprint in distribution, consumer goods, but not alcoholic beverages.
Yeah.
You know, Tolaram is a Singaporean firm.
Yeah.
You know, they are the ones that make Indomie, Colgate, and a couple of products.
Attachments.
Yeah. So, but on the part of Guinness has been struggling for some time now.
Yes, they have. Their financials have really showed some.
Yeah.
I think, if I get it, I think their financials have really shown that they've been struggling for some time.
Mostly coming from exchange rate losses.
Yes.
Exchange rate losses, sale and administration expenses. sorry, sales and marketing expenses. If you look at their financial report between the quarter that ended September 2023 and the last quarter that ended March 2024, you've seen a spike in their sales and administrative expenses from 8 billion to 16 billion naira.
Yeah.
So obviously they've been facing challenges, and this may have led to the exit of Diageo from the Nigerian market because of all of these issues.
From the Nigerian market or from Nigeria breweries? Let's not get it twisted.
Yeah. Whether the Nigerian market, the Nigeria alcohol beverage market, or Nigeria brewery, you know, what they have done is to exit the market. So, and now they have handed over to a conglomerate that has zero experience in alcohol beverages. But the market seemed to like this deal, because between in the last 7 days, the shares of Guinness has gone up by almost 20%. So it means investors have benefits they expect to come from this deal. And one thing I can look to is improvement in distribution, because Tolaram
has that experience in distribution.
Yeah, it's started to have that experience in distribution.
Yeah.
Distribution. So maybe with this, we're going to see more efficiency in the distribution of Guinness across the country.
Yeah.
But in terms of the exchange rate issues they have, it's interesting to see how Tolaram
navigates it.
Turns that on its head.
Yeah. We've done a lot of analyzing on these economic events, and it's really been an interesting conversation, if I do say so myself. And just like this, we'll be back next week to look at the events of this week. So a huge thanks to your amazing viewers for sticking with us till the end of the show. And of course, it's been real. But before you clock out, hit the subscribe button, give a big thumbs up, and drop your thoughts and your questions in the comments, and we'll definitely get to them. Catch you next week, and until then, stay financially healthy.
Don't miss any of our shows.
True.
Next week we have more exciting lineup.
Yes, definitely. So stay financially healthy until then. Peace.